The goal of this podcast is to help you break in and thrive in advertising. We do that every single week by sharing the stories and advice of those rocking it on the other side. And we're also doing this thing, which we don't know what the name of this segment is going to be yet. I was thinking pressing or ad report. You'll have to message me with ideas because we need some help. But the goal of this segment here is where we interview ad trade journalists to come on the show because they know what's going on in the industry better than anybody else. Unbiased, they're looking at this day and night, what's trending and what's not. And there's no better journalist right now to have on than Kyle O'Brien, who works at Adweek as a reporter covering the ad agency world, the agency world specific, which is what I love to nerd out about. And he focuses on creative aspects and ad campaigns in the industry as a whole. And in addition to his reporting role at Adweek, Kyle is also the editor of Agency Spy. So we have Adweek and now Agency Spy. And Agency Spy is a blog offering insider tips and quick updates on the ad industry. His expertise in dual roles at Adweek make him a respected voice in the field, recognized for his insights and his damn good knowledge of what's going on. So I ask him, we talk about the aspects of the ad world. I challenge him and I pose the question, is the agency setting still the right way to start out for all of you listening? And he kind of comments on that. But hint, hint, it's probably still a great idea because you understand structure, strategy, and teamwork in an agency setting. Now, I'll pause there. I'm going to go off script and kind of rant on why it's important for you to listen to this. Whenever I go to universities, schools, and I talk to students on these calls, which I love to do, and you can reach out to me whenever, but I always kind of talk about three core tenets on how to break in. One of them being how it is to nerd up, to know what's going on in the industry. So if you don't already subscribe to Adweek or the other ad trade journals, other ad trade publications, you should do that. But if you can't afford it or you're struggling, an easy way to do this, an even faster way potentially, is to follow Kyle O'Brien on LinkedIn and turn on post notifications. There you'll get all the updates right away, what's trending, what's not, what agencies are doing, winning, losing, all of the above. It's a hack that I've done for a couple of years now, and it's been working super well for me. So we'll have the link in the description to Kyle's LinkedIn. Go follow him. And if you need any financial support or help paying for Adweek, reach out to me and I'll figure out something. I'll do my best to like talk with them and maybe see what I can do with the breaking and entering funds if you really need some help supporting that yearly cost. And maybe they should have a student subscription. We'll talk about that in this episode. Now on with the show. This is the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. And as usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. All right. Kyle O'Brien, welcome to the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast, Pressing Edition. I don't know what we're going to call it. We're still a work in progress on this edition. But how are you doing today, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. And you, hey, you keep working on the title. Something will come and it'll be good.
That's him saying you need a lot of work on that.
Not at all.
We'll workshop offline. But yes, I think we've done this a couple times. The goal here is to get advertising reporters, journalists that study this, that do this for a living, that cover creativity, agencies, media, the industry in general for a living, to give advice, overview of what's going on in the world so that students, people that are looking to break in and thrive in advertising, know who you are and know what you're thinking about the industry. So that's what it is at a high level. Does that interest you? Is that something that you're confident you can speak on?
No, I'm hoping I can. Yes, I've been in this industry for quite a long time. So let's hope I know an inkling of what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. So Kyle, tell us about your role at Adweek today. What's your title? What do you cover? What do you love to write about? Let's start with the basics right off the bat.
Sure. I am a reporter for the agencies world. So I report on ad agencies mostly, more from the creative side than anything else. So I cover a lot of creative creative campaigns, but also behind the creative, the people behind the creative, how agencies are interacting, with the state of the industry, things like that. I'm also the editor of Agency Spy, our blog that, you know, is kind of quick hits of the industry, some insider tips, things like that. So I have a dual role here.
Gotcha. So you're editor of Agency Spy. That's your baby. And how long have you been doing Agency Spy for?
Let's see. I started in 2020 during the pandemic.
Wonderful.
Nothing like picking up a job during the pandemic. And so that was I started with that. But I also, you know, agency's reporter. So I wear multiple hats every day, depending on what needs to be covered.
I think what you cover is perfect for this podcast. I think a majority, if you look through our guest roster, you see a lot of CCOs, copywriters, art directors, account folks, strategy, production within the agency setting. I'm
sure.
Trying to expand that now after 200 episodes of agency, mainly agency folks. I love it still, but it's time to expand. But, you know, you cover this, you know what's going on. So it's good to have your perspective as students want to break into agencies. I still think, Kyle.
Yeah.
Agency route is probably the best place to start if you want to get into this industry. I think there's nothing like starting off an agency, multiple clients, fast paced. Do you think, from your perspective, that my bias towards starting off agency side is still correct? Or is there other opportunities? Maybe it's changing. What do you think about that take?
Well, it's certainly changing. But I think, you know, starting in the agency setting is really, I think it's really important because you get to learn structure. You get to learn process. You get to learn strategy. And you get to learn it in a team setting with hopefully, you know, really good support behind you, saying, you know, having access to mentors the whole way, senior level people that can help you not only navigate the system, which is not an easy thing. It's not, I mean, once you come into an agency, unless you've interned, unless you've known it, it's a absolutely different world than the academia that you may have come from. So I think, you know, being in an agency, even if it's a small one, it doesn't have to be a big network agency. It doesn't have to be a holding company agency, just something that will give you that structure of being able to take a brief, know what it is, work with a team and see it through to the end. I think that's really important. So, yeah. I completely agree with you there.
It's definitely the fundamentals there, like you said, but then being able to juggle it with multiple clients sometimes.
Yes.
Multiple deliverables, different campaigns for a specific client. I think that juggling, that kind of getting tossed in the arena, the fire, as you will, for a couple years, right, is probably still a good intro. Because then you can think about, okay, maybe I want to get my MBA, or maybe I want to go brand side, or do something else, or start your own agency. We've seen that too. So
right. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you do have that agency background, it gives you the foundation to be able to, you know, start something on your own or realize that there may be a different path in there for you. And maybe it's somewhere, maybe you started out as an account rep and you just go, oh, wow, I really found that I'm more creative than I thought. Then you have that kind of background to be able to go, okay, I think this is how I can approach it and maybe get the training you need. I mean, a lot of agencies offer that kind of, you know, mentorship, that kind of support to be able to get you in the right direction, because they, you know, ultimately they want to keep you on, I would imagine. So
right. And this is pretty comforting for me and hopefully for our listeners, because you're covering the state of agencies. There has been some threats to creative agencies, I feel like, maybe threats, maybe obstacles, maybe points of potential, if you will, with the challenge of AI, with shrinking budgets, maybe faster turnarounds, faster deadlines, less AORs, perhaps. I don't know. I'm just, you know, I look at a couple of headlines every once in a while. So there have been some of these challenges to the creative agency setting. We see pharma rising up. We see media having a lot of budgets. So I'm kind of challenging this take now. And I want to see, like, you know, should we be worried about the state of the creative agencies, full service creative agencies? Are they here to stay? Should aspiring advertisers still want to pursue this career route?
I think it's still absolutely viable and vital to the industry. I don't see there. Yes, industry the industry is changing, agencies are changing. But I think the ones that see what the changes are on the horizon are going to be able to adapt. And yes, there are some people are taking their stuff in house. Some people, some companies are looking to on more of a project basis with agencies, but
right.
agencies still have a very, very vital role, especially in terms of leadership. A lot more marketers on the brand side are looking to agencies to help them come up with ideas, not just be order takers. They're looking at them to go, oh, hey, you know, we really, you know, value your ideas in how we move this business forward. It's not just about the creative, it's about the strategy. And so, I mean, as silos break down, you know, there's less, oh, hey, strategy is over here, media is over here, and creative is over here. It's all blending together now. And so I think the agencies that see that and are able to adapt are going to be viable for the future. And therefore, when you're getting into the agency world, I think, you know, you need to see it broadly and not just I'm focused on this little thing. It's how can I learn about the entire agency world so that I can best help help the companies move and the industry move forward.
I love that. It's hard to do, right? If you're sitting there listening, thinking about learning about the whole industry, but you're trying to get a singular job, whether it's copywriting, art direction, any of those different fields within, it could be pretty cumbersome, but it will help you as you break in. If you understand high level what's going on and then how you can kind of strategically pinpoint where you want to go. And I want to get specific. A piece of advice I like to talk about is to follow Adweek. And follow Kyle O'Brien on LinkedIn and turn on post notifications. So if there is agency news that Havas Chicago wins Nike, this is not factual, of course, not yet. Then you can know that you can follow Havas Chicago and you can probably network there and you can get in and break in. It's by being nerding up is one of the core principles I preach. And to do that is to follow Adweek. I guess like anything there you would like to add on, like how can we give tangible advice to our listeners, aspiring advertisers?
Sure. I mean, nerding up is a great phrase to go with. I love the fact that, you know, if you really do want to be in the advertising industry, you need to learn about it. And the best ways to learn about it are read the trades, follow the work. Follow the people that are leading the industry and why are they leading the industry? And, you know, obviously Adweek and a lot of the other trade publications, they'll remain nameless now, but you know who they are. There's plenty of good advice out there. And, just being able to know what the trends are, being able to know where the industry is going, will help you get into the industry and be able to navigate it successfully without drowning. So
absolutely. So I think that's a good segue into like, what is the state of the industry at this moment? What are we noticing for those that do not follow or are not subscribed to Adweek? And I encourage listeners to poke around and see if you can get a deal. I think if you're a student and you have that .edu, I'm sure there might be something you can find somewhere if you're strategic and scrappy. It's just my advice there. If they do not have a subscription to Adweek, if they're not, I think they should be following it on social media. That's just a quick fix on Instagram, TikTok, wherever you guys are. For those that are not following, not up to date on the industry, what do we know? What are we thinking for 2024? Do's, don'ts, agency world setting?
Yeah, I mean, everybody is doing that now. We have our Outlook coming up in New York next week about the state of the industry for 2024. I've seen multiple studies come through on what the state of the industry is. Of course, everybody's talking about AI. It's impossible to ignore AI. But I mean, we've had AI in some form over the last few years that I think it's just now becoming something where some people see it as a threat to their jobs, whereas other people see it as a tool to be able to take creative, to take strategy, to take planning to the next level. And I think it is. If you don't look at it as in fear, and you look at it like, okay, we can use this as okay, let's try to put something on the board and put a bunch of stuff on the board, and then let's feed it into AI and see what we get out of it. That's the thing where you can go, okay, it's not scary. It's something we can use, and we can stay ahead of it this way rather than it becoming a robot that controls our life.
Right.
And I say that as an old school creative who, you know, grew up on let's put up stuff on a whiteboard with, you know, with chalk and see what comes of it. So it's possible to use technology for better, so long as you use it responsibly.
Right. I'm teaching a AI class at the University of Illinois. I just got back yesterday. This is why I'm still in the same outfit.
Gotcha.
I'm wearing this. Thank you. And that we preach the same principles. There, it's co-instructed. There is a PhD professor at the school that's talking about ethics and like the data and how it's actually built. And I'm talking about the real world application, preaching the same exact thing. Like, I'm sure we kind of talk about social media when that kind of blew up in the 2000s, 2010s. I'm sure there were people that were apprehensive and they did not want to or refused to learn it. And they were probably their career suffered because of it. Just being having that similar awareness and probably that attitude of wanting to learn about this tool of AI is probably pretty similar. And you can tell me because I can't really speak on the state of the original social media and advertising.
Well, I mean, I remember the year of mobile. I think that started in 2007 and kind of went up to now. So yeah. I mean, there's always going to be some new technology breaking through. Yeah. And the only constant is that new technology will always be available. And how do you use it? You know, people were scared of mobile when it first came in. It's going to wreck print. It alters things. Yes. But if you look at it as the technology that's going to fuel how we interact as humans, then you realize that it's how you're going to interact with it as a job. So learn it or become obsolete. And that's the only two ways about it. I just saw a study today that came in that said that 77% of agencies are going to be adopting AI in the next year.
Oh, yeah.
And those that don't are really doing themselves a great disservice.
Yeah, I can kind of see like the rest of the percentage not among the majority. They might have a unique selling proposition for a little bit. Like, oh, look at us. We're not using AI. We're old school traditional. But I think history kind of serves and teaches us that, yes, it might be a differentiator for a little bit. And then you'll just be perceived as obsolete as well.
Yeah. I mean, we're not using typewriters anymore. We're not using abacuses anymore.
Right.
So the technology is going to advance with it or yeah. You know.
So I think the listeners probably, I hope if this is the first time you're hearing like these perspectives on AI, I'm hoping that these are like kind of like fundamental viewpoints now. And I kind of bored of the AI like talk. I kind of want to get now into like, we have an agency's expert here and that's you. And I want to like, I don't know. I want to talk about whether it's specific agencies or how agencies, creative agencies specifically are going to be operating or what have they've been doing successfully to stand out. I think tailoring the conversation there is interesting. Besides, like I see these reports that are large and cumbersome and they kind of talk about the general marketing industry and the marketing side and programmatic, which is all great, but I want to talk with you about creative agencies. That's what I'm passionate about. So how can we tailor this conversation to get more so like where creative agencies are at?
Yeah, well, I mean, what, you know, creative agencies, again, they are changing as well. Mm-hmm. Because of the breakdown of silos, you know, because media and strategy are now combined with creative, creatives need to be smarter on how they approach the creative. It needs to be better informed. It can't just be, hey, I got this great idea. Let's make it fit this, you know, with whatever client we have. It's let's get to know the client uniquely. Let's have multiple conversations. Let's have an ongoing conversation on what their problems are and tailor our creative to fit those needs rather than just, hey, let's come up with this great idea and just put it forth and hope it hits. So, I mean, it's basically just being better informed now as a creative, I think. I mean, what are you seeing on your side?
No, I think it's super important now. It's like having this big idea and like kind of jamming it and trying to make it form fit for the different mediums just because I think there's more of an experiential planning that's necessary, understanding where the customer is, when they are there, what are they thinking at that specific moment in time. whether it's digital or out of home in the real world or not. I think we need to get really clear on our audience. And I think with the data that we have, I think some of my favorite episodes are with data strategists. And if an agency has that, I find that that's a great sign. Having these data strategists understand, come up with insights about the consumer specifically, where they're at, what they're thinking at that time is super important. So you kind of have to at this point. Yeah.
It informs it. And if you do have those data strategists, well, then you can more easily be informed of those sorts of things and let that, and it's all about how you use the data too. I mean, there's tons of data out there. And if you have a data strategist, they can kind of take the, all of those, all that data out there and infuse it down, that you can use it and you can actually make something with it rather than just go, oh my God, well, here's some insight. What do we do with it? It's how you take
it. And I agreed to an interview with somebody that does this, and I was like hesitant, reluctant. I'm like, data strategy, I don't know what that is. Ended up being a personal favorite interview of mine because it's a really cool job to be able to come up with those insights from a large amount of data. They need that. I mean, that's useful in any industry, really. But then you can also shape the creative directly with the creative strategist from there. So that's super interesting as well. I was curious. So you worked in agency world. Is that true?
Yes, I work for some independent agencies and I've done freelance for some networks too.
Wonderful. So I would love to hear about how you broke into that, talk about how you got into journalism, and then kind of like looking back how things are different today. And
they're vastly different.
I did not go
through typical portfolio school. I didn't even go for journalism. I got an English degree. So I broke into journalism first.
Where'd you go to college?
University of Nevada.
Nice. So
that was my second, but I went to University of Colorado, then University of Nevada. But, I got an English degree with a music minor. There was no reason I should ever be in the advertising industry. But I am, and it's because I spent years as an entertainment critic for the Oregonian newspaper in Portland, Oregon. And then I wanted to, expand my universe, and I started working for Nike, which got me in front of Wieden and Kennedy, which got me in front of, agency people. And I went, oh my God, I didn't know that the advertising world was even something I could get into. There wasn't an advertising school where I went to school. I just managed to meet the right people and then ask all the right questions. And as you were saying earlier, it's a nerding out. I started nerding out once I met Dan Wieden and went, oh my God, this guy is an absolute genius. I want to learn all I can from him. Even though I didn't work for him, I worked for him indirectly through Nike. And I went, I got to learn everything I can. And so it was those sorts of meetings that I, happenstance upon it. And I just fell in love with the industry, and I've either been covering it or a part of it on the creative side. I was also in radio. So, and radio creative is an entirely different world, but it's still the same concept of taking a brief and making something of it. So,
radio is some of the most, I think it's one of the most interesting mediums out there. I think the Radio Mercury Awards is something I always look forward to. How did you get, Nike, Dan Wieden, how did you get there again? Can you kind of clarify that? I think that break-in story you went through quickly. I think that's super important, how we can learn and take lessons from this. So from school, you studied English. So that kind of speaks to me. Copywriter, is that accurate?
Yeah, I definitely started. Well, I was a journalist first and foremost. I wrote about and I interviewed musicians and comedians. I covered entertainment in Portland, Oregon.
Did you get Doug Zanger to move to Portland and become the biggest?
He was there. We met while I was there. So
you left. You're not there anymore.
Yeah, I'm not there anymore.
Is that possible?
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to leave there, but family issue made me have to move back east, and I'm fine.
I've never been to Portland, but people, they seem to love it there.
Yeah, I was there for nearly 20 years and I loved it. And I didn't want to leave. And it was one of the most creative places I've ever been. But it gave me that foundation. You know, it was such a creative city that you couldn't ignore the fact that there were tons and tons of creative people in a fairly mid-sized city. You know,
yeah,
all the great minds at Nike. And I was very lucky to, you know, grab a job as a copywriter at Nike after you know, being in newspaper for 7 years. So
you covered entertainment.
Yes.
I'm sure there's some good stories there. Any cool celebrity interactions we want to, I don't want to miss on that. Anything good there?
I interviewed tons and tons of celebrities from Mel Brooks and Eric Idle to Branford Marsalis and Van Halen. So quite a few.
All good. I'm assuming all amazing people.
All of them were great in their own way and gave me such great insight. And, you know, interviewing those people kind of gave me no fear as to, you know, like, you know, come to the ad industry. And it's like, yes, I realize you're at the head of a huge agency, but
don't. Yeah.
I thought Mel Brooks, come on, history of the world. Come on.
Yeah.
I think that it was great training for me because it also made me ask a lot of questions, right. Which when you're in the creative agency world, you need to ask a lot of questions of the client to get to the answers you need to create the best campaign for them. And I think, you know, Zanger and I, we used to have, when we were both in radio together, we used to have a great questionnaire that we'd give all of our people to say, all of our clients to say, you need to, you know, fill this out, let us know who you are. And then, you know, we'll start digging deeper after that. So here's your 10 question questionnaire that starts it. Let's keep going from there and let's dig down to what you really, really need and get down to the one thing that you really need. And that's the point we're going to take. And that's where we're going to start your creative.
I love that process. Having them fill that out, the basics, and then you can get deeper from there. That's so important. I might start taking some of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you're like, Havas is a great place which has a lot of structure behind it. You probably have a lot of processes in place. You know, we're talking radio where there were no processes. You know, Doug and I were some of the few creative directors in radio. There aren't too many. Salespeople ended up having to write a lot of the ads. So when they brought in creative directors, it was like, oh, they're actually, you know, trying to make good advertising now. So I think, you know,
you were a creative director writing these radio scripts with Zanger.
Yeah.
That was after Nike or was that?
That was after Nike.
Okay. So getting into Nike, you interviewed Mel Brooks. You're writing for, what was the publication?
The Oregonian, the biggest newspaper in the Pacific Northwest at the time. So
boom. And then how did you get the attention? And was it by chance with Nike? Was there a role open? How did you get there?
There was a role open. I had somebody, an insider who had gone also from the paper to Nike. I mean, Portland's a fairly small world. So you're known and you get access to more people. So
and you were writing everybody's favorite articles, I'm assuming.
I was writing a lot of that people read. People read the entertainment section more than they read, you know, the Metro section. So it was nice to be able to, you know, have that notoriety. And then I had, you know, done some work in college with advertising. So they said, let's try out and tried me out. And I got a job as a mid-level copywriter at Nike. So brand side, but working alongside Wyden and other agency partners to be able to create the images for the things we designed.
And this was, so we're covering the pressing journalists, breaking, entering journalist portion. We're covering brand side and we're covering a little bit of agency side too.
Yes. And don't forget radio.
and radio too. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had a long career, so it's not something I just, you know, came out of college and went, I know exactly what I want to do. A lot of people are like that. And I more power to you. If you know exactly what you want to do, go for it and go for it.
Right.
Full on. Right. I mean, I knew I wanted to be a journalist. I knew I wanted to be in entertainment. And I went there and then I found the world of advertising and I loved it and I went there. So.
And to me, that's the mentality that I have. It's not me planning out my entire career. It's just like these bite-sized pieces along the way where I'm going to go as fast as I can to the next point. And then something will open up there and I'm open to learning about that. Having like something else might open up and I'll go hard to that next point. So it seems like you kind of did that as well. You still had like these checkpoints. You knew where you wanted to go and you were still open to other possibilities too.
Right. I was open to new challenges all the time. And I think, I think good creatives, especially in the agency world, are always looking for that new challenge, which is why, you try to climb the ladder, you try to, go from accounts to creative director to up the ladder. But it depends on, where you want your focus to be. But I think a really good creative is always looking for a new challenge. And sometimes that challenge is just the next brief. And there's nothing wrong with that. The next brief is that's your thing. And you create you want to create something iconic that people remember, or at least it moves the needle for the client. I mean, you have to move the needle for the client. Otherwise, you're just creating and you may as well be an artist. So,
right. That's a good point. So in your brand side at Nike, and was this an in-house team? Was this like kind of fleshed out grouped up with an art director is my question. How did that look at Nike?
Yeah, we had, there was definitely a lot of team structure. I worked for equipment image design. So all the equipment in sports. So from anything from baseball bats to soccer balls to shin guards to backpacks, socks, anything like that. We created the images, the internal images for those, and then worked with our agency partners to create what it would look like to the consumer. So
what a wonderful structure.
How can you argue with being on campus at Nike? It was, you have restaurants, you even have bars, you have, you get access to some of the top rated athletes in the world. It was a great place to work. I'm not going to say anything bad about it because it wasn't, but I did want to move on after a few years there. So
sure. Did you see, I'm from Chicago. There's a name that, I care about the most in sports history. And did you see any, 90s Bulls players like that?
Pippen. Well, Pippen ended up with the Blazers, so I got to meet him. And a lot of the Sonics would always come in. Sonics and the Blazers would always come into the team store, and so I got to see Gary Payton. I got to see and a lot of soccer stars too, because I worked a lot with the soccer team. So Ronaldo, the first one, not the current one. And Mia Hamm, I worked in the Mia Hamm building, got to meet her, got to see Tiger Woods dedicate his building. They just ended 27 years of relationship, and I remember near the start of it. So it's amazing.
Yeah.
How long he was, a viable name.
Yeah. What's he doing next? Do you know that?
I don't know. I haven't heard yet. I know that, I'm guessing he probably has something with Under Armour or something like that, but they haven't said yet. Nike still has plenty of Tiger Woods gear that I'm sure they would like to unload before he moves on. So
interesting. Yeah. I'm curious about the Live League as well. I don't think he's leaving the PGA, correct?
I don't think so. He was pretty against Live when it came out. So I can't imagine he would go,
Did Rahm sign on Live?
Yeah, he just did.
I think he was one of them.
Yeah. Just recently. Yeah. He was
there. They're paying a good amount of money for those golfers.
Yeah. Well, Saudi money. So
Yeah, and some are taking it.
Yep.
Where does that leave us next then? I think, interacting with Wyden, that's one of the longest agency brand side of relationships, super important. I had a meeting Dan at the time, I'm sure was a catalyst for creativity and really pointed you in the right direction. Is that true? I guess, can you speak about the times where working with him or his team and how that resonated with you at the time?
Yeah, I think, I only met him a couple times, but each time I got to talk with him, it was just, even if it was for 10 minutes, it was just learning from one of the most sage, kind, wise people in the industry, somebody who really knew what the industry was all about. And just he was that access to say, oh, my God, it's so nice to have somebody that is so respected in the agency world, that is so, that didn't really have an ego about them. It was all about the team. It was all about creating something that was bigger than just himself or even the agency itself. It was about creating work that would last and about creating great relationships. And I think I took that away from from, you know, the few times I met him, and also working with the Wyden people who you know, took that to heart. So mm-hmm.
Dave Kennedy as well.
Yeah, I only met him once, and it was very briefly, but he was he was not always in the office. He was he kind of had already started separating by then. So
got it.
Yeah, but you know, great experience. And that you know, after a few years at Nike, I went and actually started to be a freelancer. So I did everything from PR to agency freelance work, and then radio freelance, and that's what got me into the radio industry. So
love it.
Yeah, again, then, always a new challenge.
and then how did you the drum seem to be, is that true, the drum was the first one that scooped you up and was like, we have an ad trade industry editor here, let's hire this man, is that true?
Well, it was Zanger's partly responsible for bringing me on. He was already at the drum. I was working for an agency in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, doing mostly direct mail, which was weird because when I moved here, I didn't have any ties. So Zanger helped bring me into the drum and you know, getting back to my journalism roots. And it was at that point I had been, you know, so long in the ad world and the brand world that it seemed natural to be able to cover it because I had enough knowledge by then to be able to cover all the creative. So.
Oh, I love this. I love these connections. Everybody should go listen to Doug Zanger's episode as well.
Absolutely.
And follow Indie Agency News. He covers independent agencies, but
yep.
That'll be our ad for him. But back to you. I just love that. That's my, so is he like still a good friend of yours? Still a buddy? Oh, of yours?
Absolutely. We talk daily. Yeah, he's one of those people that if you know Doug, you don't ever want to lose touch with him because he's a wealth of information and also one of the nicest people on earth. So,
oh yeah, yeah, I called him. I was like, "How do you do agency awards? How do you manage that and like these budgets and where to submit, when, how to manage?" So he helped me out with that.
Yeah, he's good at that, you know, and him going. You know, network agency, he got a lot of knowledge, even though I know it was painful for him at times, but he got a lot of knowledge on, you know, really how to, you know, how the big agencies work and how
right.
And you can take that and kind of translate to that to a smaller agency world. So,
love it. So that brings us to the drum. And then you were there for a couple years. And then,
they decided that New York wasn't, the New York office wasn't going to be around anymore. So in the middle of a pandemic, I found myself without a job, but Adweek luckily picked me up as a freelancer at first and then hired me on a few months later. So
gotcha.
Been there ever since.
Is that usually the case with journalism? The freelancer position is kind of like a trial period, or is just waiting for budgets?
Yeah, I think it's a little of, you know, let's make sure this person works on a freelance basis before we decide to bring them on. I think they knew they wanted me to bring me on, but again, I don't think all the positions had opened up. And you know, we've obviously gone through a lot over the past few years. We've had, you know, we're on second CEO that I've had since I've been there. But it's a great place to work. I think we cover the industry in a different way than some of the other trades. We try to go deep and give readers, you know, really insight and useful insight on how to kind of help move their businesses forward rather than just reporting the news. I think, you know, we balance a little of both, but you know, I think our in-depth stories really kind of get to what the industry is doing and how it can help them, but either from an agency or a brand side.
Love it. What's your favorite part, like favorite story to cover, favorite thing to learn about and report on in your job?
I love going behind the scenes and finding out the why of campaigns. I think it's really fun to find out what goes on behind the scenes to make a really good campaign tick, and what takes, you know, just this idea and then manifest itself, and you know, maybe you add some personalities and some really cool creative, and then it comes out and it's, you know, suddenly the top the top ad of the week, or maybe it's the top ad of the Super Bowl or something like that.
Right.
Going into that, obviously it's Super Bowl time, so
right,
all Super Bowl all the time right now. So
yeah,
so
any this will probably air after the Super Bowl, but any watch outs, what ads I should be excited for the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I think never count out an advertiser you haven't heard of, because sometimes, especially this year, there seem to be a lot of new advertisers rather than just the traditional ones. I think a lot more of the traditional advertisers are looking to capitalize on or use their budgets rather than on one ad, use it on full campaigns that go on either side of the game. So some of the newer advertisers, they're hungry. They're going to come in. They're, you know, I love a good weird campaign. I love a good, you know, strange campaign, as long as it's entertaining and fun. You know, I think you're going to see more humor this year than you've seen. And you know, if this airs after the Super Bowl, you'll have seen it. So, you know, it'll be curious to see who comes out on top, because there are a lot of new advertisers this year. And I'm really curious to see who's going to have tons of fun with it. Cause that's what you should do. Have a great time.
If my dad and my mom call me up and say, this is not a fair barometer, but they liked the Ben Affleck T-Mobile. I didn't necessarily love that one. I was like, I thought there were some other creative ones, but that's a really good barometer. Like, what does the general public like? And I don't know, microcosm, yeah. But.
I love doing it. Like every year after the Super Bowl's over, I go on multiple radio stations and talk.
Oh, really?
Talk to people about from Minneapolis to L.A. to New York, and you know, I'm just constantly on the phone for 3 hours talking to different radio stations about what hit and what didn't, and it's really curious to see what type of station it is, and then what they liked compared to what as someone who's been in advertising, and them as consumers. So it's always,
it's so interesting. Yeah. It's like you got the ad meter, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. We have a relationship with the USA Today ad meter. So
yeah,
it's always interesting to see what comes out on top,
versus what the trades say is the best.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's subjective.
Of course. Like, it's fun. And we have to have fun.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the brands that have fun with it are the ones that always win.
Puppy Monkey Baby. I love that one.
One of the strangest, funniest, most lasting images of anything. I
love that.
Always love that. That and herding cats may be one of my favorite of all time. And nobody knows what it's for.
It was for
a tech startup that ended up selling to what, HP or something, I can't remember, or IBM. They sold to somebody.
Hey, it worked then.
But it was genius. It worked for exactly.
It sold.
They sold their whole company due to one ad. So that's genius. Genius.
Yeah,
love it.
Yeah. Was that Fallon?
I'd have to go through. I did a story on it last year. I should remember, but I don't. So okay. I think it was Fallon.
Well, maybe. I would love to maybe do like a LinkedIn Live, maybe with you and Zanger.
That'd be great.
Just for students, having that lens, thinking about like why this ad was good and our perspective, how you can create something like this spec work. I think that could be good.
That'd be great. You know, we could come up with a slate of ones that worked and maybe a couple that didn't work and show why or why not. I think that'd be a heck of a lot of fun. I think, you know, anybody would get, intrigued and informed from
something. For sure.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, we talked a lot. Any other things that you didn't mention that I missed on that you want to tell the world?
In terms of getting into the industry, I think there's not just one path. It's not just portfolio schools. And for those of you in portfolio schools, keep going, because they're invaluable. There you get some great schooling from those. But mm-hmm. I think the it's been opened up. DEI has opened up a lot of new avenues for people to get into the industry. Those who thought they would never get in, you know, people like me who could have had a path to the advertising industry but just didn't know about it. I think there are a lot more ways to get into the industry if you really want to get there. And so just look for the various avenues to get there. Internships are great, but even just online classes that just talk about advertising, even if it's not for credit, something like that, just to get you into things. I think, the industry needs diversity, in every way, shape or form, be that age, race, background, thought. The industry needs a lot of diversity. And I think we all benefit from it when that happens. So look for ways to get in if you want to get in.
Yep. And that's why we exist, this podcast. we share those stories and those resources. Absolutely. I love it. Kyle, thank you so much. We'll make sure to have everybody follow you at, is it KOBRIE on X?
That is the former Twitter. I'm Kobri. If you want to do that, I'm there. I'm on LinkedIn, so you can always find me on LinkedIn. Facebook less so, and Instagram less so, but I'm out there. I'm not on TikTok. I should be. I use it. I'm not on it. So
I love to watch it, but I have to start posting.
Yeah, I haven't really posted. So okay.
Yeah, me too. One day we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle. Great job. Thank you so much again.